We are back for another episode of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, I am Jason Floyd. That is Daniel Galvan here to talk about everything going on in the world of mixed martial arts. And before we get into the MMA discussion, let's give a round of applause. My guy Daniel over there taking home some titles last weekend.
Yeah, man. Took home some tag team championships. It's been a full week, actually. I think I won them around the same time that we did the podcast. One day after. So last Thursday, I won the tag team championships in my local promotion. It was a lot of fun. It was a great match. I had a straight up cold, common cold during the match. So it was a very difficult match to do. Went up to Fort Worth this weekend for St. Paddy's Day. Did some wrestling. And back to the grind, man. I'm going to defend those tag team championships this weekend, buddy.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Congratulations on that. I know you put some stuff up there on your social media channel. So 24 hours ago, you know, I'm driving into the office to start my work day. And, you know, I was already starting to kind of think about, you know, our show this week and kind of, you know, the topics we were going to talk about and how I was going to start a show. And, you know, 24 hours ago, I would have told you I was going to start the show with, well, we got another example why you can never believe that R word in mixed martial arts. But, well, yeah, we're not starting that this week. That is because I'm sitting here in the office yesterday afternoon getting ready to do the Fight HQ podcast. And I just go on my Facebook timeline and I see the MMA Fighting post about the fact that the UFC has settled the antitrust lawsuits. And it came out via SEC filing from TKO, where in the filing it said on March 13th, 2024, TKO reached an agreement to settle all claims asserted in both class action lawsuits, Lee and Johnson, for an aggregate amount of $335 million payable by the company and subsidiaries in installments over an agreed-upon period of time. The terms will be memorized in a long-form agreement and then submitted to the court for approval. The company anticipates that the settlement amount will be deductible for tax purposes. And the MMAFA had a tweet where it said, "We are pleased with the settlement and will disclose more when we file with the court in 45 to 60 days. We love all you guys." And I thought one of the more interesting comments that I did see, and a little hat tip out here to Luke Thomas, who tweeted out what Nate Quarry said, and I believe this was from Reddit, or Nate goes, "Thanks for asking. Right now, there's a lot I can't say with that moving forward. This way seemed to be the best option. No, we didn't get everything we wanted. Our goal all along was to change the sport. However, we had quite a few delays that we had to deal with. And to get injunctive relief, i.e. change the sport, we would have had to refile both lawsuits and combine them, go through discovery all over again, retake depositions, about a 5-year delay, and then hope we get granted class action status again. We'd be looking at another 10 years just to be where we are today with no guarantee of winning punitive amount of injunctive damages. As I said, weighing all the possible outcomes, this seemed the best outcome. We're not high-fiving one another, but we are pleased that a lot of fighters are going to be getting some compensation for being underpaid. Wish we could have done more over time. I'll be able to speak more in depth about this. For now, with apologies, this is about it. There are always going to be critics and detractors, and my response is always going to be the same. Think you could have done better? Show me how. Step into the ring." So I thought that was one of the more interesting ones. Driving into the office, I was listening to John Nash's emergency podcast that he did where he kind of answered some questions. So I would recommend anyone, you know, if you want to get more information on this. But like, I think, and we've talked about this with various topics, Daniel, where we are very much a society where it's like we're a in the now society. We don't want to kind of be patient. But I feel like this is a story where I kind of want to see, once everything is revealed in this, is there truly any changes coming? Because outside looking in right now, this looks like a massive win for the UFC.
Yes, that's how it feels. That is absolutely how it feels today. Patience is a virtue, and it's really important in this case. I think Nate Quarry did a good job of outlining the reality that they may be faced, which is waiting another 10 years to get to this very point. They refiled. That's crazy. I mean, think about it. Like 10 years, that'd be 2034. Who's to say how many fighters would still be kind of like invested in this lawsuit? Or who's to say how many of us will still be here in 10 years? Mm-hmm. It's a crazy world out there, man. We just got through a pandemic. Mm-hmm. Who knows if the aliens are coming down to attack us? It's hard to judge it right away, especially because this is very complex, and this is something for experts like John Nash to discuss and not a dodo bird like myself. But from today, this is the two things I'm disappointed in. The first thing is I really feel as though there won't be any serious change, but that's to be determined, but it seems unlikely. And this second one is more of a guarantee. I was really looking forward to the discovery of evidence that was filed in this trial. Mm-hmm. And that to me will always be the biggest what if of this situation. Because I do think had this gone to trial, no result would have surprised me based on the information I know. But it would have been a guarantee that we would have got a lot of information out of said trial that social pressure would have forced change in this sport. And that is something I'm disappointed that we weren't able to get as an MMA community. And that's why this settlement disappoints me.
And I want to bring up two tweets from John Nash, and him and Paul Giff have done a great job of, you know, reporting on this story for multiple years since it's been going on. And, you know, first off, he talked about how he was getting ready to record a podcast about the settlement. And he goes, things to consider. One, any possible contract changes will be revealed when settlement is agreed on by the court. Two, amount falls in line with the National Association of Realtors case. Three, impact of class action waivers on money. And then I thought his most interesting tweet as we record this here on a Thursday morning, just after 7:30 East Coast time here, where he said, interesting seeing the reaction to the UFC antitrust settlement. Amongst followers of MMA, it's viewed as paltry, somewhat rightfully, but in antitrust and class action circles, they're probably exchanging congratulations to the team because it comes in tied at 51st for the all-time biggest. And he had a picture about what it comes in. And 51st, by the way, was the RILI mortgage asset-backed pass-through certifications, which was $335 million. So it's one of these stories that I always felt that, you know, to me, this antitrust lawsuit was, it wasn't about how, you know, the financial impact it would be for the past UFC fighters. But to me, it was, how was it going to benefit the fighters going forward? And that to me is the one thing I want to know, you know, is part of this settlement agreement, is there something in the contract language that is going to change? But outside looking in, totally outside looking in, right now, it just looks like a massive win for the UFC, $335 million. You know, we know the fact of, you know, UFC fighters are making around 20-25% of the revenue. So, and the other thing is, and we'll get into Conor McGregor here in a minute. And the thing is, like, if you see what has transpired with Conor McGregor, it's like, if they're willing to essentially what looks like keep a guy on the sideline who really is, if you're going to name one fighter that are responsible for the massive growth of the UFC over the last 10 years, it's Conor McGregor. So like, if they're going to do that to Conor McGregor, you think they're not going to do that to, you know, John Smith?
Yeah. Yeah, we were expecting the possibility of real change out of this. Well, we weren't expecting it, but we thought it was a possibility. Mm-hmm. I think we were expecting no change out of this. That's what the general expectation had to have been. Because since the dawn of time, UFC has won. TKO has won. They are smart businessmen and women, and they win these things. So I just feel like what really sucks is that this really feels like the one real chance this sport had to change through the legal world, because it seems unlikely that there's going to be any other avenue that is going to force change to stop this from being a monopsony. And this really felt like our good shot in the batter's box as an MMA community to see some change in the contracts, to see some change in the fighter pay, to force some change. And day one, after this news has broke, the feeling that I have, which can definitely be altered based on the details that are revealed in the settlement regarding future contract negotiations, but once again, I catch that by saying I doubt it. The feeling I have is that the UFC won in a big way. $300 million is a lot of money. But as you said, this was never really about the settlement. This was never really about the money. It's in Nate Quarry's statement. This was about change. Mm-hmm. And ironically enough, the only change is the change the UFC found in their car cup holder, because that's how much money they needed to pay them off.
I think one of the things also becomes that as you look for, you look in the future of this is, you know, throughout this antitrust lawsuit, you know, people involved in this lawsuit were doing what they could to lobby in Washington, D.C. to get the Muhammad Ali Act expanded to mixed martial arts. And it's, I'm interested just to see, will that continue? You know, and like we say, we're not here to talk politics, but I've always been a firm believer of this. If 45 becomes 47 in a couple, you know, at the end of this year, I think that the odds that we see the Muhammad Ali Act expand to MMA in the next 5 years are very unlikely. And I think we all know why that is. It's just, it's, but to further what your point you just said is like, this lawsuit was, okay, how are we going to progress the sport in the future better for fighters? And, you know, it was like I was listening to the Don Davis interview last night, and, you know, Errol, and I give Errol all the credit in the world for bringing up the question, and I thought Don Davis, in a way, just kind of ducked the question because he didn't really want to answer it, but, like, you know, he keeps continuing to talk about how PFL, hey, we're that other option. We're here to open up the bank account type thing. And I'm like, outside of Francis Ngannou, there has been no major fighter, no top five fighter that said, I'm going to leave the UFC for the PFL.
Yeah, top five, no. Shane Burgos is a top 10 fighter, but not a top five fighter. Will we see one in the future? I think probably. Just because, like, somebody's got to be disappointed. Like, but it's not a steady flow. Mm-hmm. People will be disappointed. Some fighters will no longer have a place in the UFC because they aren't the most exciting fighters in the world, which is what we saw with Corey Anderson becoming a free agent. He was a top five light heavyweight, but that was a forced situation. So, it's telling that Nate Diaz didn't make the jump to the PFL. That's something that, I mean, that's a high-level free agent. That would have been the perfect, like, Francis Ngannou mold-type fighter in terms of a little disappointed in the UFC. Let's go check out some new waters and go to another promotion that's going to pay me good money. So, yeah, it's hard to say that the PFL is an alternative to the UFC. You can only give an ownership stake of your company to so many different fighters. And it's to me, it's a sad day. It's a huge story. And there's going to be generations of people that maybe aren't aware of this story as much. And it's going to be one of the biggest what ifs in the history of this sport, is what I will say, on multiple fronts. It's going to be, what if this went to trial, and what would that outcome have been? How would that have affected how the UFC does business? And again, the what if, that's a guarantee. What would have been revealed in the trial? That is the saddest thing, man. It really is.
Think about this. Corey Anderson has not fought in the UFC for 4 years. Corey Anderson fights tomorrow in Ireland for the Bellator light heavyweight title. He's a top five light heavyweight in the world. How many people actually care? Because he's not fighting in the UFC.
And I don't believe he's a top five light heavyweight. And that might only be because he's not in the UFC. That's how messed up it is. I mean, like, I don't believe he's a top five light heavyweight, but he might be, Jason. I just haven't given him his flowers because he's been fighting in obscurity.
Okay, I'm pulling up the Fight Matrix rankings at light heavyweight. Let me see where Corey Anderson's at. Corey Anderson is at 6. Above him, Yuri Prochazka, Jamal Hill, Magomed Ankalaev, Jan Blachowicz, and Alex Pereira.
What about, like, oh, is that because Nemkov's heavyweight?
You're going to be shocked who's number seven. If I gave you five guesses, you will not guess who Fight Matrix has as a number seven light heavyweight in the world.
Okay. I'm just going to say, is it Carl Moore?
No.
I don't know Bellator's Pain Fight Matrix. Is he in the UFC?
He is not. By the way, number 6, 7, and 8 are all Bellator / I guess we say Bellator, but I guess really PFL. As Don Davis called it, it's us and them.
Wow, the Fight Matrix probably hates Khalil Roundtree. They looked at Khalil Roundtree and they're like, I'm just a stalling look at the PFL roster.
Khalil, by the way, is 10th. Nikita Krylov is 9. Seven and 8 are both Bellator fighters.
Is it Bukasagan A6?
No.
Who is it?
Corey Anderson, 6. 7, Yoel Romero.
Oh, my 8, God. 8,
Phil Davis.
Yoel Romero should not be top 30. I'm sorry, but Yoel Romero has given up professional fighting. I don't know what he's been doing lately in the PFL cage with Thiago Santos, but that's not fighting. And, straight up, Romero goes in there and he doesn't do MMA. He does like little shadow boxing, little point boxing. Every once in a while, he'll throw a jab. The idea that he's 7 tells me Fight Matrix needs to go to their calculations and change it up a little bit. I don't know if they need to talk to Robert Oppenheimer to figure it out, but that is ridiculous.
If you would have told me Yoel Romero is top 10, I would not even believed you, but that's where Fight Matrix has him there. And we'll talk about that Don Davis interview here in a moment. We'll move over to our next topic, and that is Conor McGregor. He's been in the news. Are you going to watch Roadhouse 2? Are you going to check that out this weekend on Prime Video?
To be frank with you, had no idea it was coming out this weekend. But is it not getting a movie release?
No. It's going straight to Prime Video. It is available now. It debuted today.
That sucks. I wanted to go to the movie theaters, get a box of popcorn, and watch Conor McGregor on the big screen. Am I going to watch it this weekend? I'm not. I'm going to be busy. But will I watch it? Yes. I have this new system where I wrote down all my streaming softwares that I'm subscribed to, all the ones that show content that are suitable for children. Okay. And have about 7 of them. So I have a little hyphen on my notes app where it's like, I just watched something on Peacock. Now it's time to go to HBO Max. I just watched something on HBO Max. Now I have to watch something on Prime. So it's a fair and balanced list to where I'm not going 3 months without using the software that I'm paying for. So once that little hyphen hits Amazon Prime, Roadhouse 2 is going to be on the menu.
So Conor McGregor has been doing the media tour. He talked to ESPN this week. He talked to Ariel Helwani yesterday. And this was his quote to Ariel. Quote, the call has been made and we're a go. This means this summer the Mac is back. So I'm happy with my time I've got in the lead up to it. I'm happy with where we're at and everything just works out in God's name. And I'm ecstatic where I'm at. I've got great news. I got great news the other day. This is my simple takeaway. I'll believe we have a official Conor McGregor fight announcement when the UFC says it's official, because we've seen Conor do this over the past couple months, mentioning June 29th. And it's been clearly a back and forth between Conor McGregor and the UFC. I thought it was interesting in the interview with Ariel that Conor said that there has been no talk about extending his contract, which I find very hard to believe.
Yeah. Seems like something that is like the sole reason why we haven't seen Conor fight. And the idea that there's been little talk is like, I so doubt it. I mean, I feel like it's clear that from my point of view, they want to get this dude locked up before getting him back in that cage again. And the idea that there's no contract talks is a bunch of malarkey. It really is. And it's crazy because it's like, the big loser is the fans. Because they couldn't get Conor McGregor, in that cage to main event UFC 300, we are going to have to pay money to watch Steve Usyk fight for the championship. Because had Conor fought at UFC 300, we would have had ourselves an Alex Pereira main event at UFC 301. But the UFC is not afraid to shoot themselves in the foot to get this deal done. So the idea that they haven't talked about it is just complete BS.
I'll throw this one out there to you. Who fights first in mixed martial arts? Conor McGregor or Francis Ngannou?
For the longest time, the answer would be, how could you not say Conor McGregor? The answer is now, how can you not say Francis Ngannou? That is how this narrative has flipped.
I saw the clip of Ngannou basically saying his time in boxing isn't done. I'm just sitting there going, oh, man. Poor PFL. Poor PFL.
For the PFL, what do you do? Do you try and, like, get Francis to fail a boxing drug test? Do you steal all the boxing gloves out of his house? I mean, this is like, bro, just get in the smart cage twice. All right, let us get you in there. Fight Henan Ferreira. Come on, it's
okay. Outside Deontay Wilder, I can see where maybe Deontay Wilder sees a value in fighting Francis Ngannou, but like, if you're a boxing promoter, are you just saying, you know what, we've done this Francis Ngannou experience and we're done? I just wonder, is there really an appetite, even with the mixed martial arts fan, to see Francis Ngannou back in a boxing ring?
One more time, yes. One more time. One more bad performance, and I think the appetite is completely gone. I think there's enough interest to see it one last time. I don't think it ever did massive business in terms of pay-per-view buys. So it's not like there was an amazing amount of interest in the past. Mm-hmm. It did amazing business for his bank account and it was a huge deal, but it's not something where I think this is selling a million buys on pay-per-view. So yeah, I think people want to watch it one more time for sure, but one more bad performance and I think the people will be kind of done with the story and they won't be too interested in it moving forward. So Francis has really got to be selective on his next boxing matchup before he finds himself boxing Mike Tyson in 2 years.
Bro, that is going to be so intriguing on how many people actually watch that fight live. That to me is just going to be intriguing. Mentioning about Don Davis, and this is also a relation to Francis Ngannou, where during his interview yesterday with Ariel Helwani, saying that they're having to have Francis Ngannou return on a pay-per-view event in Saudi Arabia between July and September. Larissa Pacheco versus Chris Cyborg expected to be the co-main event, with Cedric Dumonde also being featured, which he did mention that would not be Cedric's next matchup. They're looking to have him fight on the Bellator Champion Series show in Paris coming up here in May. But yeah, so you go to the old X machine over here, aka Twitter, and so Jedi Goodman, who had put up the video of Don Davis saying that you know, about Francis Ngannou in this pay-per-view and also about Cyborg Pacheco being on the card, Chris Cyborg's Twitter account, or X account, because, well, we really don't know if it's truly her that was tweeting this or if it was someone in her camp, goes, quote, "There's a big difference between June, July, August, or September at Don Davis PFL. I have other business commitments outside of fighting. I wouldn't announce who and where I'm fighting until those discussions have been held privately."
There needs to be legal action taken. These entities need to stop doing business with one another because it is not working between Cyborg and the PFL. I mean, this is very reminiscent of, like, in high school, like that one toxic couple that just couldn't, you know. It's like, why are they dating? You know, and obviously the reason why is because, well, there's a contract that the PFL bought from Bellator, and that's why they're dating. But I can't name a worse relationship in sports right now than Cyborg and the PFL. I mean, seriously, go across sports. What two people are working together in the sports landscape that have less respect for each other than Cyborg in the PFL? it's insane that the majority of conversation between these two entities is just subliminal text and subliminal Ariel Helwani interviews. That is how these two business partners are communicating, Jason. Where else in sports do you see this? The last time, this reminds me of Shaq and Kobe whenever they were beefing on the Lakers. That's what this reminds me of.
So Chris Cyborg's X account also had this where it says, quote, "My next fight is Leah McCourt and nothing has changed. Let me know when she's healthy and ready to compete." And what then became very interesting was Ian Parker quote tweeted what Cyborg said. And I think it's very important to note that Ian Parker is a part of the PFL broadcast, where he tweets, "Cyborg is one of the best to do it, no question. However, this is where believing you are the brand is a big no. PFL just did a card with Bellator where it was champ versus champ. Cyborg tweeted every other Bellator champion was booked but her. Now the owners of PFL and Bellator, which she's under contract with to give her the Pacheco fight, she says no and tells everyone who she is fighting next, LOL. Not how it works unless you are Conor McGregor and you're not even Conor. Always got what he wanted when he wanted, as we are seeing currently. No fighter is above the brand. We have seen this. So if you want to fight, fight who the company tells you to. Otherwise, you're going to sit idle and the sport will be fine and move on. A fight against Pacheco is a great fight. There's nothing against McCourt. Let her get a dominating win over Sinead and then get the winner of Pacheco and Cyborg." And Cyborg ended up responding saying, "Why am I forced to sit 10 plus months for a fight? Pacheco can happen, but not after such a long period of inactivity. This is where a promoter is more concerned about their brand than the fighter. What's the reason for my inactivity? I've got more than one fight remaining on my deal." And look, I think Ian brings up some great points, but also I think Chris Cyborg brings up a lot of great points too. Clearly the PFL wanted to make Cyborg versus Kayla Harrison, and kudos to the world for Ariel Helwani yesterday basically bringing up to Don Davis, where Don Davis previously said Kayla Harrison had one fight left on our deal, and it's almost like Don Davis didn't know how to answer the question. And it's like Don Davis, like, I'm always fascinated by his interviews just because I don't know what he's going to say. I don't know what crap is going to come out of his mouth, whether I should believe what he says or not. But I'm always like, I feel like I have to watch because I'm like, he's going to say something that I'm going to go WTF.
Yeah, totally. And it's kudos to Ariel for doing a good job of providing a good interview to her. He asked some damn good questions to go along with it, and he's not completely allowing it to be just a PR situation for the PFL. So kudos to him, because again, you listen to these interviews and it's just like, that's crazy. That's not true. I don't believe that. Those are kind of the recurring thoughts that happen time and again. I mean, that's kind of been the biggest problem with the PFL, is them saying stuff that I just do not believe. What Ian's saying is true, in that the world isn't going to stop because Chris Cyborg's not fighting. The world of PFL will continue to revolve. Totally true. What's not true is she doesn't have to take the fight against Larissa Pacheco. She has leverage to negotiate. This is a 38-year-old legend that can compete in boxing and make a living. She doesn't have to do what the PFL says. She has retirement money. I would assume she has retirement money. Who knows? But she certainly has fought enough to retire. She's certainly talented enough to continue to box and make a living. And she has a big enough name to wait it out and get what she wants. And clearly she wants to fight against Leah McCourt. Why? Because it's a hell of a lot easier. I think Cyborg, I mean, that's the other thing, is like Cyborg doesn't want to fight Larissa Pacheco because Larissa might beat her. Straight up. Larissa's actually pretty talented, really dangerous. One of the best non-UFC female fighters on the planet today. She's got to win over Kayla Harrison to show for it. Cyborg's 38. She doesn't want to go out there and lose. And if she's going to lose, she's going to do it on her terms. She's not going to fight Larissa next because I think she has a decent amount of respect for Pacheco.
At the end of the day, these two parties just need to have private conversations and not play this out in interviews, not play this out on social media, because I think at the end of the day, look, Chris Cyborg needs a PFL. PFL needs Chris Cyborg. They can do some business together. And it's, you know, look, I would love to see Larissa Pacheco versus Chris Cyborg. I understand why PFL wants to make that matchup. But, like, I think it's a matter of these parties just need to get together privately and just, first off, have an agreement that, hey, we're not going to talk about this publicly. We're just going to sit here and have a private conversation. But, of course, Bellator does return coming up here tomorrow in Belfast, as it was announced earlier this week that the event here in the United States will air on HBO Max. I was very happy with that decision, Daniel, because I get HBO Max for free being an AT&T wireless customer. So I was a little bit happy with that. But, you know, so we have Bellator on Friday, UFC on Saturday. UFC, we got Rose Namajunas, who, you know, she talked to me yesterday how she wants to be a two-division champion, you know, get the 125-pound belt. It is kind of interesting that second straight fight she would not have Trevor Whitman in her corner. It's a little bit interesting note. And it's like, you know, as I look at both these fight cards and I'm like, man, what interests you more? I mean, Bellator's got two title fights. I think the co-main event of Bellator may be the best fight of the weekend, and that's Patricio Pitbull defending his featherweight title against Jeremy Kennedy.
Yeah, that is a really good fight. It really is, and I'm excited about it. I think Jeremy Kennedy is probably one of the more underrated fighters on the planet right now. Not a lot of people talking about Jeremy Kennedy, but he's put together a nice little three-fight win streak, incredibly talented, and Patricio needs a win in a big way. I mean, he's coming off of a disappointing matchup in Ryzen, and this is he's defending the title. I think he – what are the odds in that Pitbull-Kennedy fight? Who is the favorite – because I think Pitbull's in a precarious position to maybe lose that championship to Jeremy Kennedy.
Jeremy Kennedy is the betting favorite in this one over at DraftKings Sportsbook. He's minus 125, Patricio Pitbull plus 105.
I would put a little money down on Patricio. I still believe in him. I still do. You know, I believed in OSP. I'm pretty sure I picked him against Kennedy Zuchukwu. Could be wrong about that one. I believe in my veterans, Jason. So do I think that's the best fight of the weekend? Yeah, I think it's slightly better than Rebus Namajunas.
Okay, if you look at the top three fights at UFC and the top three fights at Bellator, you tell me which fight card has a better top three fights. So over at Bellator, we've got Corey Anderson versus Carl Moore for the vacant light heavyweight title. Just mentioned about Patricio and Jeremy Kennedy. And then we got a number one contender matchup in the middleweight division of Fabian Edwards taking on Aaron Jeffrey. Your top three fights over at UFC Vegas 89. We got Amanda Ribas versus Rose Namajunas, Carl Williams versus Justin Taffa, Edmund Shahbazyan versus AJ Dobson. All right, if I go to 10 hardcore MMA fans who take in UFC content, PFL, Bellator 1, how many of those 10 people are going to say you'd rather watch those three UFC fights over the three Bellator fights?
Look, all 10 of them are going to say you would rather watch March Madness than either one of these two things, but they're going to say Bellator over the UFC. The difference is Bellator had to go and sell tickets, and the UFC didn't. That's what is evident in these cards. That Bellator lineup is better than the UFC lineup, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Shahbazyan and Dobson is the worst of those six fights. The second worst – actually, that's not true. Justin Taffa, Carl Williams might be the worst. I don't know. Either way, that's 5 and 6. So now you're looking at the top four, and three of them are those Bellator fights. Number one is probably Patricio, Jeremy Kennedy. Number two, I feel confident in saying, is Rose and Amanda Ribas. And then 3 and 4, you can fill it in with Corey Anderson, Carl Moore, and Fabian Edwards, Aaron Jeffrey. That's how I would rank these top six fights. It's a weekend of mixed martial arts action. We are in a valley when it comes to, you know, last weekend we had another Apex card. Yeah, Marcin Tybura won a fun little matchup in the heavyweight division. He scored a submission win, and there were some good finishes. But, God, we are just – it's going to be thin until UFC 300, bro. I mean, yeah, we got that fight night in New Jersey coming up, the Blanchfield one, where they actually had to sell tickets, so they put fighters on the prelims. But then we got another Apex card, and then finally UFC 300. It's a bleak time. The thing is, if you're an MMA fan, like, this is your time to watch college basketball. That's what the UFC is telling you. That's what Bellator is telling you. Hey, it's okay. You don't need to watch these cards because they are not great cards, Jason. This is fill out your bracket, drink some beer, watch some basketball, because the product we are giving you is going to be ass.
Yeah, I mean...
Dude, Edmund Shahbazyan is the number three fight, bro. What the hell?
At the end of the day, you describe this perfectly when it comes to UFC Apex cards. It's the developmental fight cards for the UFC. I mean, and if you look at, obviously you have notable names in the main event of Rose Namajunas and Amanda Ribas. I don't know what to expect out of Rose Namajunas. I really don't. I don't know if she has the body frame to become a champion at 125 pounds. I don't know if she does or not. You look at someone like, look, Justin Taffa has a 100% takedown defense rate in the UFC. I would say this, I would put a crap ton of money that Carl Williams will take him down, if not once, multiple times. That is Carl Williams' best path out there. Edmund Shahbazyan, I mean, look, a lot of people were super high on this kid not that long ago. Don't know. Peyton Talbot, Cameron Simon may be a very fun fight. Billy Quarantillo, Yusuf Zalal may be a very fun fight. There's other fighters, but I mean, look, you look at the UFC card and it's a lot of guys and females that you're more looking at where are they 2 years from now. And that this is what the UFC cards are. I think the Bellator card is a good card. You know, one of the things I thought was interesting that Ariel asked Don Davis and Don Davis would not give an answer of how long the deal with HBO Max is, did indicate that there could be some stuff on True TV slash TNT. I would imagine that would probably have something to do, with the U.S. broadcast, the U.S.-based shows. I want to say two of the eight Bellator shows this year will be in the United States. So, it's you're not giving me, I would say this, on Saturday, you're not giving me a reason to stay home. And I already had previously had plans anyway. I'm going to a spring training game on Saturday afternoon, but I think tomorrow afternoon I'll be in the office. Will I put on the Bellator fights? Yeah, I'll put them on. I don't think I will be intently watching what's going on just because I'm trying to get through the workday.
Well, I think with Bellator, I don't think this is a good card for Bellator 302. I really don't. I think there are two fights that I'm interested in watching, but I think that Tim Weil, Mano Souza, Leandro Higo, James Gallagher, Fabian Edwards, Aaron Jeffrey, those are all like, fine. Those are like 3 out of 5s for me. They're just there. The cool thing for Bellator is like it's low-level barrier entry comes up. It's just a 5-fight situation. Just put them on, watch the fights. It's not high-level in terms of high-level Bellator product. I don't know if we'll ever see a high-level Bellator product again. It seems like this is what Bellator is going to be. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that because the marquee product is going to be the PFL cards. So this is kind of like what we're going to see, a couple of high-quality championship fights in the top two fights and then some decent fights on the other part of the main card. I'm just glad that they're on Max. I really am. Mm-hmm. I think that was a good home for them. I feel like Max is a part of that rotation that most people do have. And so as long as you're on one of those streamers, that's a success. I think to be on DAZN in America would have been a death note for the Bellator brand.
I'm with you on that one. When you look at this fight card outside of the top three fights, look, it is about putting on fights that was going to put butts in the seats. And, you know, one of the things I love about Tapology, and I guess I did not pay attention to this, of course, Jeremy Kennedy fighting for the title, that apparently originally they had booked Jeremy Kennedy to take on James Gallagher. Did they want to get James Gallagher killed?
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know if it's going to be that much better against Leandro Higo. I mean, with Higo, I think maybe we'll see a lot more grappling between these two. But that's a tough matchup for James Gallagher. It really is. I don't like Gallagher's chances, but it's time now. Put up or shut up for James Gallagher. He's got to get the deal done.
He's Gallagher, look, if the fight stays on the feed, I do not give him much of a shot to win the fight. I just don't. I think Higo will beat him up on the feet. James Gallagher has to get the matchup to the ground, but I think their Bellator is probably to the point where you look at their talent development team led by Mike Kogan of like, look, at some point we got to put you in there against legit dudes. We just can't keep giving you these fights that are just tailor-made for you. So, I mean, in terms of that, I do like it. I mean, look, if you look at these Bellator events in 2024, you're going to have two title fights on every card. So, I mean, they're going to do their best, but I think that ultimately when we hit 2025, that PFL roster is going to be really deep. When you talk about these fires that they're having in there. By the way, kudos to Brent Ward. He is now in the PFL welterweight tournament. Kyle Kretschmer pulled out, so Brent Ward is now in. Also mentioning about that Don Davis interview with Ariel Helwani, he mentioned that there were some Bellator champions that they wanted to put into the PFL tournament, but he said, you know what? They said no because they made too much money over the past couple of years, and they were like, nope, not interested in fighting four times in a calendar year. Mentioned Patchy Mix, mentioned Johnny Eblen as two of those fighters, and I mean, look, I guess if you're Johnny Eblen, you're out here spending $85,000 on a OnlyFans model. I mean, hey, man, life is clearly good. Life is clearly good if you're out there just blowing $85,000. I'm just saying, whew, that's a lot of money.
Wait, what happened?
Oh, you don't remember that story?
I kind of do, but I've forgotten.
Where Johnny Eblen was out on the town with an OnlyFans model and spent $85,000 on a shopping spree with her.
He spent $85,000.
Yeah. So this was, let's see, when was this dated here? I can't see the date on this.
Johnny Eblen doesn't make that. But it
says Bellator champ. This is from TMZ. Bellator champion Johnny Eblen treats OnlyFans model to an $85,000 shopping spree. You don't remember that story?
I'm just doing some research on the story. What? Yes, now it's starting to ring a bell. Johnny Eblen's fighter IQ has got to be questioned, bro. You're spending $100,000 on someone. Y'all better be married, okay? You aren't making that much money, Johnny Eblen. You are not a... There's no way this dude's a millionaire.
So, okay. Millionaire. All right. So this is a quote from his appearance on the MMA Hour where he was asked about it. He goes, I've just been balling a little bit lately. I can't talk too much about it. It's fight week. I've got to focus on the fight. I'm a man, I'm a professional. I've got to focus on the fight. Article goes on to say, pressed on the 85,000 figure, Eblen didn't confirm nor deny, saying, quote, that's what they said.
Bro, what do you even buy for 85 grand? If I told you, Jason, I have a gun and I'm going to shoot you if you do not spend 85 grand in an hour in person, not online. You got to go shopping. You can't buy a car either. How are you spending that 85 grand? Are you able to spend that 85 grand? Or are you just buying Buccaneers polos?
I would bet jewelry store would be my first place. Oh, I feel like you could go spend 85,000 pretty quickly.
Good call. Good call. I usually just buy the gummy rings, but that's a good call. Yeah, Johnny Eblen, again, I know he's made good money. My boy did not make 85 grand shopping spree money in Bellator. I am sorry. I refuse to accept that Bellator was paying people millions of dollars.
Let's just say this. I've heard some fighters in Bellator got broken off with some Bitcoin.
Bro, let's say you make $850,000. $85,000 is 10% of that.
Look, this is all I'm saying. If he allegedly spent $85,000 on a female, he's having a good time with that female.
Yeah. You can have a good time spending $85, brother. Okay, that's got to be a marriage. That's got to be a family member that you are spending $85,000. It's more than just a good time. It is all the time. That's how much money. That's how much time you should be spending for someone. Again, I can't overstate how much money that is. That is insane. That is the amount of money I will make in the next 3 years combined, and it was all spent on a date, on a night out in Saudi Arabia.
Look, clearly the girl's doing something right to him,
and surely she's making money already. I bet she's making more money than him. I don't know much about her, but I think she's probably doing well.
I mean, look, let's just be honest. But how many people in our listening audience would take their girl out on a night on the town and spend $850?
I mean,
look, I can go have a super nice dinner at Council Oak here at the Seminole Hard Rock Casino in Tampa. Dinner and drinks, I'm probably spending about $300.
It's a tough economy. It's a tough economy. I'm not spending more than $300.
And then you're going to go gamble. So you might be 500 in for the night. Gamble, drinks, dinner. Maybe you spend $500.
And here's the thing. If you're with someone where you got to spend $85,000, they don't love you. Okay?
Unless you put a ring on that finger.
Yeah. If you need to spend that much money on a date with someone, they do not love you and you need a new partner. That is my two cents. No. But yeah, that tells you how bad this fight weekend is. As we give you more in-depth analysis on this aspect than Carl Moore versus Corey Anderson.
It's tough for me to get excited for Carl Moore versus Corey Anderson. It just is. The reason to tune into that Bellator card is Patricio Pitbull, Jeremy Kennedy. Plain and simple.
Yep. It is. I mean, Corey Anderson's a heavy favorite for good reason. If he gets upset, it'll be a story. Patricio's got his back to the wall. He's not the only championship level fighter. Rose Namajunas, she has her back against the wall in terms of, like, she's got to go out there and perform, because this is a fight where she's expected to beat Amanda Ribas. Previous versions of Rose Namajunas get that W.
Yeah.
They do.
A couple of notes to end the show with here. Walt Harris, we are not going to see him in the octagon anytime soon, as it was announced that he has accepted a 48-month sanction for two separate violations of the UFC anti-doping policy. He tested positive for two banned substances on June 24, 2023, and July 12, 2023. He was notified of the first adverse finding on July 11, 2023. So he has accepted the 48-month period of ineligibility, which began on July 11, 2023. So the odds of us ever seeing Walt Harris back in the octagon, you would think be very slim. And then, of course, I mentioned right at the beginning of the show, we had another example of why you never believe retirements in mixed martial arts. Jose Aldo is, even though he's been competing in boxing, he is coming out of MMA retirement to take on Jonathan Martinez at UFC 301. And boy, if you would have heard Daniel before the show, when he just had just seen what the UFC 301 main event was, oh boy, that was classic.
Yeah, I was not aware that Steve Ursig was fighting Pantoja. I just was not looking at the news on Friday, I guess. And then I was really busy Saturday and Sunday driving. I was sick. It was a whole thing. So I had completely missed the news cycle that Steve Ursig got the title fight. And that was just insane to me. That was insane. And the most insane part was that the UFC was charging people for UFC 301. I was like, is this one of those things where it's a number show, but it's on ESPN Plus? Because Steve Ursig versus Pantoja, that is a Apex main event. That is what that is. I am sorry, but Steve Ursig is not a top 10, like a top 5 flyweight. He's a top 10 flyweight. He's number 10. But for the love of God, there's 9 men with better resumes. Yes, Muhammad Makhachev had an opportunity to pass the test with an A+ and get that flyweight championship. And yes, my man got a C. Don't get me wrong. But Steve Ursig, are you kidding me?
You hate, man, how good is that Haterade taste in your cup right now?
I have appreciation for Steve Ursig. My man's 3-0 in the UFC, got that big win over Matt Schnell. It's crazy that he's a main eventer. It really is. This UFC 301 pay-per-view is not a pay-per-view. This is an Apex card. It really is. I mean, okay, it's not an Apex card. It's a fight night card in Brazil. That is what we got going on. And, it's one of those deals where 298, 299, UFC 300, this is jam-packed. It's loaded. Well, this is the bill the UFC had to pay to load those cards up, UFC 301.
Yeah, just looking at 301, I mean, it's just – and here's the other interesting part about Jose Aldo. Boy, I guess we don't have to do that 6 month of drug testing anymore.
Yeah, that is true. That is very, very true, Jason.
I mean, like, for the people who like, you want to talk about the UFC giving some ammo to the people who want to question their anti-doping policy? You just gave them the ammo, because this guy is literally fighting in 2 months from now. And so, yeah, if Jose Aldo comes jacked up to UFC 301, we're all going to be going.
We're all going to have some questions. Look, if he's taking on Jonathan Martinez, the one place Aldo needs to have muscles is his legs. That's a tough fight. Martinez's calf kicks are violent. And it does kind of feel like Aldo's bringing back just to be fed to Martinez to build him up and also sell some tickets in Brazil. But, yeah, if he's got some muscles, bro, make sure it's around those calves because that's where he needs it.
Yeah, I mean, and look, and Aldo has always been, you know, very good at defending the leg kicks. By the way, speaking of Jose Aldo, you realize yesterday, this is how long we've been involved in the sport. Yesterday, 9 years ago yesterday, was the press conference in Brazil for UFC 189 for Jose Aldo versus Conor McGregor. 9 years ago.
A whole decade. We've been doing this damn thing for far too long. And we'll keep going till the wheels fall off. That is crazy to think about.
Dude, I saw that in my Facebook memories. I was like, holy crap. It's been long?
Yeah. Time just flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, man. But this weekend should be a fun weekend for me. The only thing on the agenda really is to go check out some spring training baseball. Always an interesting time with the fellas. You know, I'm sure there'll be, one or two beers consumed.
You know what needs to change about baseball?
What's that?
Why the hell? You know what's sacred? You know what's sacred? MLB opening day. It's the first day of the season.
That was yesterday.
This Korean series where it's like 1 week before the season starts between the Padres and the Dodgers and randomly these two games, it's opening day and two teams already have things on their record. It's got to stop. It's got to stop. I don't know what I have, but I think I have some OCD, like something where I feel unwell that the opening day is going to happen and there's already going to be games played. I can't deal with this. I can't function, Jason. I want donuts. I want donuts on every team's record when it's opening day and it's the first game of the season. The same way that the first four in the March Madness is so stupid that there's 68 teams and not 64. The MLB having a season game series a week before opening day pisses me off to no end. But I do hope you have a good time in spring training. You know, the spring training games are happening 3 days after the first game of the season. Yes.
Look, this is reality. The baseball will be the background noise.
I know that.
It'll be hanging out with the fellas. I mean, that's what it's really about.
Yeah, I know that. I know that if I popped in the seventh inning and I popped in and I looked at you, I was like, Jason, I want you to tell me who's pitching right now. You may not tell me. You can't look.
I'll give you a better one. I was at the Phillies Tigers game last Wednesday, and it's literally like the second inning. I'm in a Corona suite, so I'm with like Corona reps, whatnot. And one of the guy goes, "Who's pitching for the Tigers?" I looked at him, go, "No clue." No clue.
Yeah, that is hilarious. But that's the vibe, bro. That's the Tampa Bay spring training vibe. You know?
So look, when you're in a suite, a lot of things are being consumed.
Yeah.
So the baseball game kind of becomes the afterthought.
Yeah. Well, I do hope you have a good time, man. And I'm certainly jealous of you. I'll be out at the Vipers game tonight. Maybe as people listening on Thursday, be working that game. And got myself some wrestling in Laredo, Texas on Saturday and back home in Alamo, the Rio Grande Valley on Sunday. The local newspaper came out to a training session last night and they're going to come out on Sunday. So I'm looking forward to seeing the little article they do on us.
That's awesome.
We have a local newspaper that prints on two times a week now, no longer every day you get the printed paper. So I'm looking forward to seeing that and hopefully one of my pictures makes the newspaper and I can show it to my grandma. So, yeah, that's what I got going on.
I couldn't tell you the last time I read a physical newspaper.
Dude, the only reason why I do is because it gets delivered to my parents' house. So when I go visit them and it's there, I may give it a look while I'm at the table eating some food. But yeah. I can't imagine the last time someone under the age of 40 subscribed to a physical paper? Who was the last one to do that? You know, who was the last under 40-year-old person that went to the local newspaper and said, "Can I have this delivered to my house?" I don't think that's the thing anyone under 40 is thinking about.
I'm just trying to think. Like, I remember, you know, growing up, like, it was very familiar to see every couple of corners there would be a newspaper stand, you know, put your quarter in to get newspaper. I can't recall last time I saw a newspaper stand anywhere.
Yeah. Maybe it's less common in the bigger areas. It's a little more common here, but it's not a stand. It's in the convenience store is where you'll see the papers. You'll see it at a gas station.
Look, okay. Next time I actually physically walk into the gas station, I'm just going to walk around and see if there's a physical newspaper.
Yeah, I don't know if it's different in Tampa than it is in the Valley. That is still alive and well where I'm from. But yeah, we'll see.
Not alive and well here. Look, first off, how many of us actually, when we go get gas, actually go inside?
Not many of us, unless we need to go get some food or something.
Yeah, unless you're getting like, you know, some type, you know, you're going to get yourself a water, soda, beverage, whatever it may be. Yeah, I mean, look, I was talking to my dad about this yesterday. Like, we're pretty much becoming a cashless society.
Oh, we are. We are. It's you won't find a lot of people with a lot of cash in their wallets these days. I don't have much. I can tell you that much. It's mostly just a debit card.
Every once in a while, like during football season, I'll have cash on me just because of the per diem I get. But in terms of like, unless like I had to go get cash last Saturday because me and the fellows went to the Rowdy soccer game here in St. Petersburg, and so my buddy bought the ticket, so I went and got an ATM out of the cash out of the ATM. But like, yeah, I mean, the only time I would say that I'm going to get cash is if I'm going to the casino.
Yeah, for me, the car wash. That's it. If I'm gonna put some money in,
I have a monthly subscription to that.
Yes, exactly. Everything, it's a cashless convenience
site. Yeah, and like right now, I'm going to a damn car wash every 2 days because the pollen is freaking insane here right now.
Yeah, my allergies are kicking my ass right now, so I feel you.
Dude, like the parking lot here at the office is just like we're literally getting it swept like every 2 days because it just we have so much trees around, and it's just pollen everywhere.
Wow. Yeah, so you're hitting up that car wash, huh?
Oh, yeah. Like every, 2 days? 3 days?
Yeah. Damn.
You know? I think I went like last Friday. I went Sunday. I went Tuesday. I mean, it's... And part of me, like, if I didn't have a monthly subscription, I'd probably just say, screw it. Let this pollen sit here on the car. I'll wash it a week from now.
Yeah, but you have it, so use it. If I had a monthly subscription, I would be just like you. But I'm not. I don't have one, so I wash my car about once a month. I mean, it's just
well, that's the big thing down here. At least in Tampa, I don't know what it's like in other parts of the country, but you know, we have car washes now everywhere, and pretty much majority of them are, you know, they offer some type of month. I think I pay $32 a month or something like that.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you go at least once a week, it makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
I used to have the subscription that included where they would vacuum everything out, but then that just once they raised it to $70, I was like, no.
No, you can't.
Because then you feel like you got to tip them too. I was like, yeah. I'm like, I'm going to be like $150 in a month.
That's not a good budget. If you're spending $150 on car washes a month, brother, that's not a good budget. That's a Johnny Evelyn budget.
No, especially, I mean, bro, how expensive it is to live in Tampa right now is, bro, it's insane.
Yeah.
It's insane. Yeah. Like literally I was out at a local bar and, you know, I like to drink Stella's, you know, tab comes. And I was like, holy crap. I look at the bartender. I go, y'all trying to price people out, aren't you? He goes, what are you talking about? I go, bro, I work in the bar industry. No one charges $9 for Stella's.
Yeah.
That's and crazy. he just looked at me and just walked away. I was like, yeah, you're trying to price out people who you think don't have money. I mean, I was like, I'm going to pay it, but like, I literally listened to it and go, the odds of me coming back here and paying $9, I go, I might as well go across the street to the grocery store and get myself a six pack.
Yeah.
And go home.
That's crazy. That's absolutely bananas. Out here spending $10 a pop basically on a single beer. Hell no.
That's like going to, it's like literally going to a sporting event.
Yeah. And then you got a tip after? Nope.
My guess is on Saturday at the Yankees game, I would be surprised if beers are less than $14.
Yeah, that seems about right for a sports game. You're going to go out there and it's going to be a big dent in your bank account.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say at Lightning games, it's like $16, $17. Yeah. Now, yeah, it's like a 25-ounce beer. I mean, but yeah, it's still a sticker shock. You know, when you're there with one of your boys and, you know, you're paying for this round and you just realize you just spent $40 for a round of beers.
It's a good time, but it can't happen all the time. That's the way it goes. It's a good time. It can't happen all the time or else you're going to be broke. But you go out there, you know, a weekend, have a fun time with the boys.
Yeah, I mean, it's like when I was out for St. Patrick's Day. They go, you want a green beer? No, I'm good. I'm good. I don't need a green beer.
Yeah, I want a good beer.
Yeah, I mean, literally all you're doing is you're taking Bud Light or Miller Light and you're putting Green Dye in it. That's all you're doing.
And then charging a couple extra bucks. And
not really. I mean, most places here, they're doing like $3 green beers. That was kind of the promo.
I don't need the Instagram picture. I don't need the Instagram picture to fit in with everyone else, you know. Just another green beer picture. Oh, cool. Yeah. Yeah, no one's going to be like, damn, this is so cool with that green beer. No.
Bro, the IG algorithm, I had to laugh last night, you know, because I sit on the bed. Fucking, you know, I'm like every American. We sit on the bed. We scroll Instagram reels. We scroll TikTok, you know, as long as until TikTok goes away. Yeah. And I see this video, and it's this one guy telling his friend, it's like, everyone's got that one friend who hates losing at games. I'm like, God damn it. They're coming straight for me.
They know they are coming straight at you. They are. Hate they know lose. Who you are hate and everything lose. About you. Yeah.
Hate to lose.
They know what you need DNA, brother.
I remember having a buddy growing up. We play video games. If he was about to lose, he just turned the console off.
Oh, yeah. Throw the controller. That's the American way.
Yeah, it is. But as always, we appreciate everyone tuning in this episode of the podcast. Of course, we'll be back here next week to talk about everything going on in the world of mixed martial arts.